Organizers to see everybody. I'd like to take this opportunity to introduce and very much thank Mindy Beatty and Bob Kowalski from Pfizer to talk about the value of decentralizing the budget in order to maximize the information return. Mindy has actually kindly, Mindy and Bob have kindly provided handouts on everyone's desktop here of the presentation, so you'll have something right in front of you to refer to. Mindy's a senior manager heading up a group of librarians, the Information and Library Services at Pfizer. The team is responsible for all library-oriented work, such as the acquisition of content for e-journals, databases, news, and books, as well as the Ask the Librarian service, a number of outreach and training, copyright, catalog maintenance, and a number of other things. Wow. She's been at Pfizer since 2006, and prior to Pfizer, she worked at Lyondell Chemical in Cincinnati as head librarian, and 7 years at Dow Chemical Company, so certainly a wealth of experience to draw on. She holds a master's degree in library science from Catholic University of America in D.C., and she's on the board of the Wiley Customer Advisory Board. Bob Kowalski, her colleague here and also her co-presenter as a manager, as well in the Information and Library Services Group at Pfizer. He's managing also the e-journal and database, news and e-books licenses. Prior to Pfizer, Bob's been at Pfizer since 2009. Prior to that, he worked at Wyeth for a number of years in Andover and Cambridge for 15 years, managing the journal collections there. He also holds a master's degree in information library science from Simmons College in Boston, Massachusetts. He's the past treasurer for SLA PhD, so we should know him pretty well. And with that, I'd like to give a warm welcome to my two colleagues here.
Turn this on yet because I was afraid it would make too much noise. And then I realized I had to do it. See, I just stuck it in my pocket. There we go. Can everybody hear me? I don't know how close it has to be. Okay. Now the antenna is sticking out, Tim. You see all this logistical stuff. Nobody ever tells you all these things you have to worry about. So thank you, Tim, for the introduction. Bob and I are really happy to be here today. I know Bob's been very active in PhD over the many years, and so we're thrilled to present and tell everybody about what we've been through in the past year and a half. Probably a lot of things that many of you have been through as well. We'll go ahead and get started. And the clicker. I'm sorry? Oh, it's not in presentation mode. Thank you. So just to cover the agenda, you know, we already did the introductions part. So, you know, why did we go through this allocation? Our budget was centrally in our department before, and it has been for many, many years. I don't know of a time when it wasn't. And Bob's going to cover the how we did it part, all the technology and the usage, tracking, and mapping that we did. And some of the feedback that we've had, mostly we'll be talking about our R&D experience because most of the funds were transferred to research and development. And then we'll just go through summary and a few other things. So Information Library Services at Pfizer is under R&D Business Technology. And for the rest of this presentation, we'll refer to that as IT. So we're under the IT organization, which is included in finance at Pfizer. So we are not under any reporting line to research and development. And the Information Library Services Group is under a broader group called Business Insights. And then there's my team, and I have three team members who do content management, as Tim said, Ask a Librarian, document delivery, the library portal, anything related to that. And a big part of our job is the content management portion. We work with many suppliers. And I said to Bob earlier, it's kind of sad because I actually probably know many more suppliers here than I actually know many of my pharma colleagues. I should know a lot better, but we haven't come to the conference every year. So back in 2011, Pfizer was going through what all of us in the pharma industry have gone through many, many times. And they made huge announcements in February 2011. They were closing the site in Sandwich and Kent, which was one of the original Pfizer research facilities. They had to save a lot of money on the R&D budget. So we had to make all of these really tough decisions about what we were going to do about it. Because we had to start looking at how we were going to save money for 2012. Because the budget cycle starts in the summer. So after all of these announcements, and of course, if you're going to lose significant headcount in the company, it's expected that you will save money on the budget because you can reduce your licenses. So we had a lot of things that we had to think about. Pfizer in 2011, when they made this announcement, they said they're going to save at least $2 billion in research and development costs. So they spent $9.5 billion in 2010, and now we're down in 2012 to $7.9 billion in research and development costs. Now, our function, as I mentioned, we're in the IT organization, but we're R&D business technology, IT. So we support the research and development function. There's different IT organizations that support different parts of the company. So our VP works with Michael Dolston, who's the president of R&D. So we had all of these things we had to think about. We had this 20% reduction in our budget. We had these site closures. And because of all of this, we had to figure out what we were going to do next. So this is Pfizer's headcount since 2003. Now, I took this directly from the Pfizer 10K, because otherwise you'd never get this approved in the company system that you have to wait to get your presentation approved. The presentation, of course, with the notes stripped out, so it's only the slides that you see. So we have gone down approximately 8% a year in headcount. Now, there was a spike in 2009, as you can see, when Wyeth was acquired by Pfizer. And then, ever since then, we've been going downward again. Again, approximately 8% a year. And our headcount was 91,000 at the end of 2012. At the same time, we've reduced our budget by double digits. And I know that doesn't sound very impressive, but I was told that I couldn't actually save the actual percent. So that didn't make it past the clearance committee. Way more than 10 or 20, let's just say that. Way more than 10 or 20. So when I started at Pfizer, we had, you know, a significant budget, and I am all about cost savings, and I'm the first to admit that, but I do want to maintain as much content for our clients as possible. But if they set a target, our team does everything we can to meet it, if we have to. And that means communicating out to clients and saying, these are the journals we dropped, these are the books. And these are not books, but like any databases, et cetera. And these are not resources that we have that are duplicative. We're long past that. And just so everybody knows, we have everything, but we only have electronic content. We have no physical libraries. So when I started in 2006, they'd already closed the physical libraries. They were still in the process of, you know, giving away the last chemistry books, as the chemists love to come in and get their books. And I was hired to manage all the electronic content with the team. So we've gone down quite a bit over the past many years, and we had to figure out again in 2011 what were our options. We had this huge reduction that we had to meet. We have, you know, a lot of disruption in the company, clients not happy and people not happy in the effort. So what were we going to do? So what we said is, okay, we've got a couple of options. We can restrict usage or cancel subscriptions, but you know, we kind of already did cancel a lot of subscriptions, so how do we figure how we make that? But it also, you can't restrict a lot of times, like with journals, they're pretty much enterprise accessible. And the databases that were already limited by user, you know, to only so many seats, they were already down to what they really could be. So then you go, well, what if we only give access to full-time employees, FTEs, instead of everybody who's on the network? Well, then that's kind of hard to actually control access. Because if everything is IP authenticated, if they're on the network, they can get to everything anyway. So the third option was to transfer the money to the business. And the issue, of course, is there may not be any actual cost savings to the company, because even though you're saving money for your department, you know, if you don't save, if it's just cost avoidance, or it's like, well, we didn't really save any money for anybody, but, you know, we did all these other things, it's what's really reported out from procurement and from your finance department, that cost gets rolled all the way up in the company to report out to investors. So you have to have actual cost savings. And then the other issue, of course, of doing business allocation, transferring it to someone else, is they might say, thanks for that money. Yeah. We really appreciate that, and we would love to cut that in half. Okay, well, we'll work on that. So what we ended up deciding was we still had to do business allocation. That's really the only viable option. So in every case, we knew that we had to get better usage. Now, we, of course, have counter-compliant stats like all of you do, and we do our cost per download analysis and all of the usage analysis that we need to do. What is harder, though, is actually figuring out who in the company is doing what. Now, if you have a resource that people log into and you can get database statistics directly from the supplier, that's easy. And some of those are the more high-cost resources. But you still spend quite a bit of your budget on journals and everything that's IP authenticated. So what do you do? Now, earlier in right about February 2011, we actually had been working on this issue somewhat already, figuring out how are we actually going to map usage? How can we do a better job of seeing who's using what in the company? So we worked with the group in network services and started this usage collection program. So Bob's going to speak more about this. But we started it then, but we knew now this was the key. As we had about 6 months of usage, we were going to have to formalize this, figure out a team and everything else. And we knew that we needed like 12 months of usage to actually do anything, because everybody here knows there's always that spike in September when everybody comes back from vacation, right? Or January. So you can't base it on like only a quarter's worth of data. So this is where Bob is going to start talking about what we actually did to collect all this information.
Okay.
Here, Bob.
Thanks, Mindy. And I'm going to try and do this without the little portable microphone, but I'm going to hide behind the podium, so hopefully that'll work. Can everyone hear me?
Yes.
So thanks to the pharma and bio divisions for having us, and I'll just jump right into it. This is really what we needed to do. We got the green light from our vice president in IT in terms of allocating the budget. And we had to scale up the process that we already had in place. So we had to put together a team, and we also had to reach out. That was the first thing that we did, was we reached out to our contact in network services within the IT organization to find out what would be involved in scaling up the process, you know, for particularly for collecting the usage data. And the team that we had in place had to do a number of things that the slide nicely illustrates. I don't know if I'm going to use the pointer here. And to continue collecting the usage data, we had to analyze it. And in particular, the analysis had to map that to the users within the company up to the division level for us to do an allocation. And then we had frequent reports throughout this process leading up to giving different scenarios for an allocation to our leadership, but both our director, our senior director, and also our VP. They had a lot of questions for us and some directions they thought we should go in terms of things just as simple as you should present this pie chart this way, or you should, what are these figures mean? This doesn't make any sense. So there was a lot of back and forth throughout this process. And as Mindy said, I'm going to do the how-to portion. And although I wasn't really thinking of this analogy or illustration when we were putting together the slides, it's really a recipe book for how we put this process together. The big driver in this was really our attempt to save the budget from further cuts. The IT organization had additional cuts that maybe weren't, even though the R&D organization was saving money, the IT organization had been saving, you know, asked to give back more money, you know, and we were really stuck with, do we just cut and cut and cut, or do we try and give the money back to the people that know what the resources are and that need them? So we really put this together, not on a shoestring, but with the existing people and systems we had in place internally. And so although I don't have a blender on the slide, what we have is gears to put together the two key ingredients, really, the users and the usage. And what we did was we provided two data sets to the network services group. And we did have one team member that was on our group, the core team, if you will, that was part of that organization. And we provided him with a full pull of all the HR data for all the colleagues, and I believe all the contractors as well. And it was a large file, and it was constantly being updated with cost centers changing and whatnot, and divisions, and people coming and going. And we also provided them with the base URLs for all of our licensed resources for them to track using Blue Coat. And Blue Coat is simply it's a company and a software, and it's used for tracking internet usage throughout the company. So if you ever hear something like, YouTube is the top thing, it's any the employees visiting at any one time or Facebook. That's what's in place in tracking that. And the base URLs, again, it's simply what it sounds like. It's the sciencedirect.com or the springers.com that we use, that are the websites that people are going out to get to the resources. And so they put those together, and they provided us with regular reports on a monthly basis that track various file types and matching the users within the company to the resources that we license. And this is just it's a screenshot with the actual cost center stripped out. We had to do a lot of, I won't say dumbing down, but we had to take out a number of things to get the slides approved. And this was just one of the questions that came up. But it's really a screenshot of one of the regular reports. And as you can see, the AACR journals, the licensed resource, and the document type are PDF. The two key document types are really PDFs and HTMLs for our purposes. There were a number of other file types that were being tracked, all kinds of Microsoft Word documents and Excel and Flash and whatnot. But for our purposes, the PDFs and the HTMLs were what we wanted to see. And they provided us with these on a regular basis. And the colleague data that the Blue Coat system tracked by default was slightly different from what we needed. So that's why we provided them with the HR data. They actually had IP addresses for individual machines and actual user names that they were not able to provide to us because of privacy concerns. So they took the HR data that we had provided them in order to map together some department and cost centers where there was some gaps on their end. And so we needed to put together, like any good recipe, the next thing is putting together the key ingredients. So we already had log files from the network services team with some department level and cost center information. And what we did, we have an information scientist that's part of the core team, and they have an expertise in some tools such as Pipeline Pilot and Spotfire. So she was able to use Pipeline Pilot to put together a number of pieces of data. And really, this slide is an oversimplification. We tried playing around with a screenshot of the pathways. I don't know if anyone's familiar with Pipeline Pilot, but it would either be too small, the font would be too small for you to see anything, or it would take up several slides to show kind of one path through. But really, the data elements that were being put together, I should say Pipeline Pilot, for those that are not familiar with it, it's a data flow programming language that's used at least in the pharmaceutical industry by chemists and for sequencing. And we were really mapping together a number of data elements. The HR pull that I had mentioned earlier, the Blue Coat log files, the names of our licensed resources along with the annual costs that we were spending on them. And we also had to integrate one key non-web-based resource. At the time that we were doing this, one major database, SciFinder, was actually, there was a huge desktop installation. Not 100% of the people were on the web yet. I should say the other way around. There's only a small number of people that were using the web interface for SciFinder. We were kind of slow to cut over. So we had to integrate that just because it was a major resource. And we had to run this analysis frequently, as I mentioned earlier, in order to get, you know, kind of refine the process and bring back data to our leadership. So now that we had all the data components pulled together, what we needed to do is we needed to do further analysis in order to bring back proposals for our leadership. So again, the information scientist who had the expertise with these tools put together, was able to extract all the data into my favorite file format in maybe some years, Excel, that we could do some external analysis with outside of the tool. And Spotfire is also really good in terms of creating a lot of visualizations that we, and so these were some of a lot of the pie charts and whatnot that we were able to put together and use in some of the presentations that we were doing for our leadership. And the primary fields, and again, a lot of columns are stripped out here. In part, we recommended to keep it simple and to help us get the presentation approved. But the primary fields that we were working with for the analysis were the company division, the name of the resource, and the percentage of the usage in terms of the number of times that it was accessed. And knowing the cost of each resource and the total number of usage across all divisions, we were then able to calculate the percentage of usage by division as well as the percentage of cost in terms of dollars. And so using the SpotFire, get some water. Using the SpotFire generated analysis, we were able to bring to our vice president a full breakdown of the percentage of usage by division within the company, and in order to determine how to do the allocation. And these slides are, again, not actuals, but they're illustrations of two different scenarios that we had a lot of. The one on the left is a clear illustration of a resource that has got a majority usage by one division. You know, and this was the case for a lot of our R&D organization, the R&D resources, where the R&D organization was the key user. We also had some that were more the news type things, as well as a few journals that were used, if not equally, there was no clear majority user across the company. So there was a breakdown throughout. So we were ready to work on the allocation, and our leadership wanted to know what the options were. So the next steps that we had was to find out what other companies were doing, and also to find out what additional administrative requirements would be involved. So we did some benchmarking and information gathering. In spring of last year, we put together a survey, and 12 pharmaceutical companies participated. We wanted to find out what was how they were funded and whether they had an allocation model in place, and if they did, how they did it. And of the interviews, we had two follow-ups with companies that did have well-established chargeback models. And we also did internal interviews with some of our information service providers, folks like the medical information groups and competitive intelligence groups. We wanted to find out how the budget allocation might impact their workflows. And we got a lot of feedback, and it was really in the form of challenges. The budget allocation, we need a lot of usage, as Mindy mentioned, that you can only base the usage on the past 12 months worth. And you need a lot of usage, and it's got to be accurate because the budget is going to depend on it in terms of who's getting what for allocation. And you need a stakeholder council in place or a governance process. It's nice to have one anyways, but without the budget being centrally located in the library, you need something more than just key users of the resources. And finally, we can't do selective licensing, particularly for the enterprise resources that are IP authenticated. And what I mean by that is if you get four or five divisions that are splitting an allocation, splitting the cost or allocation for any one resource, and then in year two or three, one of those divisions decides they can't or won't fund it. If it's IP authenticated and enterprise-wide, as far as the access goes, the other divisions are going to have to pick up the cost. And internally, the big thing that we heard back from was from the information service providers were really that an allocation model in place might have a domino effect in terms of chargebacks. And what I mean by that is that a lot of them, by service providers, I mean they were doing work on behalf of other groups throughout the company. So if they're power users for a lot of the databases in particular, but also some of the news and journal resources. And so if we are charging back their cost centers based on their usage, they may in turn have to charge back their customers throughout the organization for the work they're doing for them. And so we took this into account, and we pulled together a final proposal for our leadership. We have a little bit more than three working up to this, but at the end of the day, we had three. The first one we call the phone bill model. And we really, it's just that, I guess. There's over 20 divisions that were using the resources, and we just split it up by percentage based on the usage of the resources, and we made that proposal. And although the column on the right shows the percentage of the budget that is retained by the library after that happens, and this is good in one sense because only 10% was retained by the library, and that was one of the key goals in this case was to get the budget out of our group. However, the procurement group, I need to drink water, sorry.
Finance.
Procurement group shot that down. It would be overly complicated for our finance department. It is too many divisions involved. So the next level we went down to was a threshold of 50% or more. And the big difference here is that any one division that was using 50% or more of a particular resource would get the full allocation for that budget. This is more actually representative of who were the major users of the particular resources. However, 32% of the budget was retained by the library, which is not what we were really looking for. We really wanted to get more of it out. So we went down a different threshold, but down to 35%. And with that, we had 9% retained by the library. And 35% was chosen. There was actually, and the 35% was selected. And there was actually still resources like that pie chart on the right from a couple of slides ago, where there was no clear ownership by any one division. So what our VP did was get together with the leadership and the three divisions that were selected for allocation, and they chose homes for a number of resources. And the library retained a couple of outliers. In particular, there was two scenarios here. There was one, there was some resources that really didn't fit into any of the three budget, into the three divisions that we were allocating back to. And so we retained those. The dollar amount was too low to allocate out to a different division. And the other was some databases in particular that are heavily used by the information scientists within our own group, so we kept those as well. So overall, 93% was mapped to a division, but not all the costs could be allocated or transferred. And the OECD example on the next slide is an example. So, and again, a lot of columns are stripped out for purposes of the presentation getting approved. But so now that the decision was made, the communication and change management process was established. And with that, I'm going to turn it back over to Mindy.
Thanks, Bob. So now that you have all this money, right, you tell everybody what we're going to tell them what we're going to do with their money. I like that part. So the first thing, of course, is that we had to reach out and meet with everyone. And as Bob mentioned, research and development was the group that ended up with the most amount of the money. But a lot of that's just because the most of the content is scientific. So when you look at the pie chart and you see, you know, like, 75%, you could go, well, there is, you know, an Elsevier or a CAS or anything else. But as you mentioned, some of the other ones were a little more difficult. But we had three different groups, and they were a business, primary care, was who agreed to take the money. And that a lot of the commercial kind of resources, business, things like that, went to them. And then we also had one service. So that was at least good. There was only one budget, like one line item on that budget to manage for that one particular group, and that was the news service, went to policy, external affairs, and communications. But today, we're mostly, as I said, talking about research and development. So we had to go through this, a lot of meetings with these stakeholders and tell them, you know, this is what we propose. This is how we'd like to run things, because we're still going to do the usage analysis. We're still going to make the content decisions, make the recommendations. But then there's this whole other process that has to happen after that, like who signs agreements, who approves them in Ariba, who does all these other things, right? So we had to tell them what those milestones were first, because right now we're meeting with them, and it was about August, and we had this big kickoff later in September. But we said what we have to do first is we have to say, this is how we're going to do it. And then here's those milestones. We want to be able to meet with you. We have these deadlines. Most of the contracts expire end of the year. It's December. Like, Pfizer's on a calendar year for their fiscal year. And we do have some mid-year renewals, but we said we'll get to those next year. But we'll need to be able to meet with you. We have to have time on your calendar. And so we started working with research and development of scheduling all these meetings and doing all these other things. We said, okay, well, here's all the information from the previous year. Here's how much money we spent before. Here's the where we reduced something. Here's where something went up. And also tell them some of the stuff that they may not want to hear, which is everybody in this room knows your budget never stays flat unless you actually cut content. Most publishers, information, and suppliers have 3 to 5% increases at least. And we said, so we're giving you the money that we spent in 2012, but for 2013, you may have to come up with extra if we're going to keep everything. So we just wanted to make sure we presented all the risks to them, so such as negotiation strategy. We said most of these suppliers are sole source. We know that people in R&D probably manage mini contracts, but not content. And content is very different. And that's why we said, we're still here. This is where we have our expertise. And they were happy to do that and said, just tell us what we're supposed to do, and which is what we like to do. So we said, okay, we need this, we need this, we need this. These are our requirements. And as I said, we have to have somebody who's going to sign agreements. Someone's going to approve them. We have to have regular meetings with you. We'll present the information. Told them how we normally do this, what are these metrics that we collect, and what do they all mean. And then we still needed to have this whole communication plan set up of, the next 4 months. So we had this kickoff in September with them to review all the high-value licenses. So anything that was, 200K and up, we did a slide. We had a video conference. Now, we're working with research and development person who's the operations chief of staff for Michael Dolsten, who's the president of R&D. So we've moved up now that we're having these regular meetings with somebody who's very down to earth. We had this video conference because we've never actually met in person. So it's April, and we've still only had phone calls and video conferences with them, but they're in New York, and we're just not down there as often. But it's worked out really well. And we explained all the various resources, went through these slides. We said, this is what the content is, this is how it's used, this is what people use it for, this is how much it costs, this is how much it cost the year before, this is the usual metrics we present, and that way they had a very good understanding of what was coming to them. And we said, this is just the kickoff, we've already reached out to all the suppliers and asked for price quotes, and then we'll start informing you as this process moves forward with negotiation. So we also established these weekly updates. And my team member, Jane Burke, who's on our acknowledgement slide, Jane ran the renewal process. So she was the one that sort of collected all the information from us each week. What renewals do you have coming? And we did a standard email and said, this is all the stuff we're going to cover in the meeting this week. And so they would have a pre-read. And the person who reports to Gotham, who's our contact, she is actually a former information scientist. So it was great to have her on the team because at least she had a working knowledge of many of the resources that we were talking about. And then, as I said, we met with the stakeholders, we gave recommendations, asked for approval. Now, one of the other great things, actually, which I'll also talk about later, is that we were able to do more multi-year licenses. So they're like, oh, are you going to do a multi-year license? And we said, oh, we can actually do that now? So we were actually really excited about that because usually you can get more cost savings and you're also locking in your content. I'm sure everybody hates having to send out those announcements that says we've dropped this huge list of journals or this database or content. So we were really happy that the other piece of this, what came out of, the first question we asked them when we got in that meeting is, do you have a budget target for 2013? This is how much money we gave you. Is there a 10% reduction? Is there a 20%? Is there anything we need to know about before we start negotiating and have to know up front? They said, actually, no. But if you can come pretty close to where you are right now, that would be great. But they didn't have this huge reduction right off the bat, which is what we've been dealing with over the past 7 years. So we also did the spreadsheet. Everybody loves Excel. But they're happy with Excel. That's what they like. So, but we would show previous year's agreement, a fee, the current year proposed fee, but also we did it so we could track the variance for them. So if they knew they had X million dollars, how much were they over when they started looking at their budget for 2013? So this is the part about what went well, and it actually did go really well, so we're very excited about this. As I said, we retained more content in 2013 than we had in a long time. I don't know if there's suppliers here that might disagree with that, but hopefully they're all happy about how things went. I know many of them are standing here in the room. So we still had these, as I mentioned, these tight budgets. Pfizer still continues to shrink. I'm sure many of you know that, and my colleague Julia is probably in the room somewhere, but Zoetis is a Pfizer animal health business, and that's being separated as going to be a whole separate operating company. So there's always all these changes, and there's all these budget things that we have to worry about. But we had avoided these like huge percentage cuts right up off the bat. We also had this seat at the table with these executive leadership right off from the beginning. First, of course, of having meetings with our VP, our senior leaders in the IT organization, then also people in these different business groups that we were working with and saying, this is what we're negotiating, this is what's happening, giving them regular updates, and presenting at our VP's executive leadership team on all these different options. So it was really just incredible visibility for our department, and we have such a fantastic reputation in the company now, and in our organization, and now in R&D. Very big visibility. We have a quote from our director, Joe Woodward, who is also now serving as our VP's chief of staff. So everything's gone swimmingly. Now, the other things, of course, are things like process improvements. We made all these changes. There's still a lot of stuff that we have to do. Like, we're not managing one budget and forecast now. We have four. So even though the budget's sitting over in R&D or primary care or somewhere else, we're still tracking the budget. We're still working with our portfolio people to make sure that we're staying on target. What's their forecast? When are things expected to pay? We're lucky that we have this great person in our department who helps us keep track of all these various things, because it was actually easier when I had one, and I thought that they would just take ownership, and we wouldn't have to worry about it anymore. But they said, no, actually, we'd like you to help us keep track of all this, because you understand if this particular supplier always takes a long time to pay, or if these people never send an invoice, or it's not right, so that we can do a better job forecasting and when something's going to hit. And if an invoice is millions of dollars, they really don't want that up and down in their budget, which I'm sure you all know. So they were asking us for expertise to help plan things and keep the forecasting on track. But the normal process improvements, as I mentioned, were just keeping up with the business and, having these regular meetings with them, changing the way we're doing things, but it's more to manage now. So we proposed, here's what we think went well, to our R&D stakeholders, and they gave us great feedback as well. We said we loved being able to do multi-year agreements again, and because they were actually saying, why aren't you doing more multi-year agreements? And we said, well, a lot of it's the budget commitment that we couldn't make when we were in an IT organization. And they said, well, we think we're always going to need X journal or X type of database, so they were committed to just signing it and making it happen. Not, of course, with the carte blanche. I see Sarah nodding her head at me. But, we had also this, the communication between our teams was fantastic. And as I said, very down to earth, even though the person we're working with is a VP, regular calls, just so friendly, so helpful. They have an admin in their department. She, helped expedite all the signatures, the approval. Things have to get scanned. There's a huge process to all this, which I'm sure you're all managing as well. And that part went really well, because we saw an improvement in the number of days also that it takes to get a requisition through our Ariba system, because there's a lot fewer people on the approval queue. So it goes directly underneath this person who's a VP. And then if it's at his level, then you just have the few more procurement people right after that. But then if it goes to the president of R&D, he clicks the button, there's a few more procurement people, and it's done. When we were putting these requisitions in under the IT organization, there was it would go under Bob, and then me, and then my director, and then the senior director, and then it goes to the VP, and then it gets approved there, depending on the approval level, and then it has to get approved by various people in procurement. So it took forever. So we were really happy about how quickly things went. And, you know, suppliers are happy, I'm sure, because then they can send their invoices much faster once they have their purchase order. We also had fantastic engagement, as I mentioned, from research and development. They asked a lot of questions. I mean, and I understand because they're not familiar with the fact that we do the, you know, what is content? What are all these journals and subscriptions? Like, of course, they know what Nature is, and they say everybody has to have Nature. But at the same time, you know, they really had such an understanding of why scientists need this information. And when you're in an IT organization, that's not quite the same. When you have a contract that comes in front of the CIO for a database that's not related to IT at all, it's a much more lengthy discussion about why is this in our department. So they're happy. R&D is very happy now. And also the suppliers were very receptive because we could say, R&D, we sat in a meeting with them and they said, well, we don't want to pay this percent and this is like our bottom line or this is our initiative and we have to follow this. So it's not coming from us anymore. It's coming directly from worldwide research and development. So the suppliers are hearing it from them through us. Also, R&D said anything that's under a certain dollar value that our director could sign, we could just do that and take care of those, and he was fine with that. So that made things move much faster because we have a lot of contracts that are the small ones from like medical societies, et cetera. So things that could have gone better, there's always those things. So inconsistencies in how we presented the data. What they want is just show me the percentage increase, the percentage decrease, percentage. Very simple, cut and dried. I mean, you are spending time with somebody who's a VP, so we have to make sure that we have very clear and concise, you know, discussions with them so that you're in and out of the meeting in 30 minutes, because that's basically what you get. We also had a meeting with them just 2 weeks ago, and they said, oh, and you don't have to do PowerPoint for us. That's okay. We don't need that. We said, really? You don't need a slide for everything? And they said, oh, no. Here, just use your Excel and just put in your percentages, and that's fine with us. We're happy with that. Because everything, I always joke, in our organization, like nothing can be explained unless it's on a slide deck. So I was perfectly happy to only do Excel, and we were thrilled. So, and they're just, they've actually taken our spreadsheet that we were managing and doing the variance and all of that, and they said, well, we put in a few other columns that we'd like to see, and we'll put it on a file share. And so then you can just go in and update it, and then we have access to it, and then we can all just share it, and then we just bring it up at the meeting, and then we can click right through and say, this is what we've approved for this week. Simple. So it's going to be so much easier at the end of the year. Other things, of course, that could go better. Not all of the contracts are completed by the time that the contract expires. So that's not new. It might have been new to R&D, but it wasn't new to us. But we said we will do our due diligence to make sure that we try to finish more before the end of before the expiration this year. We did do about 25% of our contracts. We manage about 120 contracts, and we did about 25% of them as a multi-year. So then we'll strive for that same percentage this year. So that way we can get them kind of on a schedule. So we're not having to do like every negotiation for all 120 every single year. That takes a lot of time and effort. I mean, our fourth quarter is basically content management. We don't really work on a lot of other projects and do a lot of other activities in our department. So we're hoping that that will help lighten the load for us as well. But we do, for the suppliers that we do have these lengthy discussions, we want to make sure that we just schedule the meetings earlier and get going earlier if it was something that really ran over. So how long does this actually take? And this is a strange chart. It was very hard. As Bob said, like with the pipeline pilot thing, it was huge, and it had tiny little writings. We couldn't put that on, and that was the same with the timeline. So this actually starts at the top left and then goes down. But we started the usage tracking, as I mentioned, in February 2011, and then did all this scenario planning and then presented our options in July of 2011 for how we were going to go forward with our contracts and, you know, how we were going to make cost savings. And then when you go back up to December, we did this huge communication across the company. We posted things on internal websites, news stories, you know, everything that we had to cancel. And then we're starting all over again in the spring when we said, okay, now we're working on this allocation option. So you can see we started in February 2011, and then the final allocation options and money was transferred as of September 2012 for 2013 budget. So it took a long time, and there were a lot of meetings with leadership, a lot of meetings with R&D, more meetings with R&D, more meetings with leadership, lots of meetings with suppliers. So we feel it went really well, and as I said, it's brought huge visibility to our department in library services. Now, we do manage the e-library. People use it all the time, but they may be using it going from PubMed and then out to a journal, probably not always clicking on JAMA through the e-library. But we have 19,000 people who subscribe to the e-library announcements in the company. So this team has worked really hard to promote our organization. And so when we send out these announcements of like training or new resources or anything like that, we have 19,000 people subscribed. And one of the ways that we actually got all those people, because we had about, I think about 4,000 before, right, who had just subscribed themselves. So as Bob mentioned, because of privacy, we weren't allowed to see these people clicked on these things resulting in this usage. But what we were allowed to get later was the actual list of people. It just couldn't be with what they clicked on. Although now, of course, we heard last week that watching cat videos is actually really good for people's productivity. We weren't allowed to see that. Because I think it's like YouTube is probably like the number one clicked on thing in the company. I don't know. But not in my case anyway. I don't know what... Yes, they're all business related, I'm sure. So we took all of those NTIDs, all of those email addresses that we had from our network service group. Again, they were all separated from the usage, but we uploaded them into our announcements blog. And when we sent out the next announcement, we all sat back and just kind of gritted our teeth. We thought, oh God, here they come, because we expected like unsubscribe, unsubscribe. Because you know, you get all of these that come into the library services mailbox. They actually didn't. There weren't very many. So they could be deleting them, I'm sure. There are people who delete them. But we have a huge number of people in the company who use resources. And you know, we want to make sure that they're getting what they need to do their job. Because ultimately, the success of research in a pharma company is for the researchers. They need to have data to do their job. You have to plan all this sufficient time to do analysis, more mapping, communication, communication, communication. You have to have a lot of buy-in from your leadership and your stakeholders. There's so much, as I said, so much communication, and just building that understanding of what you're actually doing and what expertise you're bringing to the table, because they might be scientists, but they don't do the same thing that we do in our job, just like I can't go do bioinformatics things like we saw earlier today, but I can negotiate with suppliers. So, and that's why we feel that they are still happy to have us do our part of the job, and they're really thrilled. We had a great feedback session with R&D, and they said, you know, everything went really well. Do your Excel spreadsheet. We're happy with you. So keep going. Now, again, I said, now you're going to manage multiple budgets. And there, of course, was one department who said, thanks for that money, but we'd really like to cut this contract in half. They're not all positive. But at the same time, we kept more this year than we had kept in years. And then the next thing that we're working on as the next steps is they said, okay, now that we have all this stuff and the budget's under us, we want to work with you as your sponsor in the company to work on, they call it maximizing information assets. How well are they utilized in the company? How aware are people of it? So we've got this program that we're working on with research and development. And see, because they can open the doors for us and cascade messages throughout the company that we don't have that kind of access to, that's going to be a huge improvement on any kind of announcements we could ever make, even though we have 19,000 people. But having them come down from above will be, you know, are you aware of this resource? So we are actually working on how we can see the users and the usage, and maybe also looking at a single sign-on type of program so we can better see that. Because if you have a regulatory database, for example, and you know that it's IP authenticated, you don't know actually who's using it, how do you do outreach to the people who should have it and might not even be aware of it at all? So that's why R&D is helping us with this program so that we can better target the outreach, because they're spending a lot of money and they want to make sure their resources are used. So we just have a few acknowledgments here. And as Bob mentioned, we worked with a lot of information scientists who are experts in Pipeline Pilot and Spotfire and many other people in our organization. And then and I know there are probably some people here as well that we did as part of the surveys and interviews. So that's all. And I know I didn't leave a huge amount of time for questions, but.
Fire away.
That's pretty much it. Do you want to stand there? In case they ask a technical question, since Bob was managing the technical part.
Depending on how technical it is.
It's way too small. Okay, thank you, Mindy and Bob. That was great. Are there any questions from the floor? Wow, okay. Hands go up immediately. Okay, I guess I'll start with Brian.
Thank you.
We're having
a matrix project also, but my management is very tough. They say, okay, John, matrix. The true value metric is not just numbers, but impact. So how are you handling that?
That's a great question. So this gets into the maximizing information assets. And we said, yeah, we can have statistics of how many times people click on something, which according to our blue coat data was more than 11 million clicks, like in a year, I think it was. But you need the qualitative feedback. And that's why we're planning a survey and we're actually planning focus groups. And again, R&D is going to help us open these doors, and we're going to be talking to research teams because we want to understand the workflow of like research and this kind of information content into their workflow. Like, where are they using it and how, and why is it important to them? Because number of downloads is great, but it doesn't get to the qualitative part of why they need that. So that's coming.
Great.
So Mindy, you mentioned single sign-on data, and my department's name is Information Analytics Sciences. Mm-hmm. So I preface that because my boss asked me a question about statistics, and he used to work for SAS. And I'm like, why are you asking me this? Right. So we did an analysis based on our single sign-on with our document delivery statistics. And the question that he asked us was about sample size. So is this an adequate sample size to extrapolate to our electronic journal statistics that we get from our publishers? And I said, I have no idea, but I'll look it up. And it turns out that it was like 43 times the sample size. Like, we needed a sample size of 300, and we had a sample of 13,000.
Wow.
So I bring this up because we are not allowed to do the kind of data collection, or our technology, our IT department won't help us collect the kind of data that you've collected using Blue Coat. We've asked and been denied. So that we've been using this to extrapolate to get to some of the same results that you've gotten, at least for the journal data. So I bring it up as a, you know, maybe a fast and easy way for people to do some of the same work that you've done that took technology and time to do.
Right.
So that sample size that we used was like a 90-something, 99.99999% confidence level, and it makes you worried about those election surveys.
Yeah, well, thank you. We definitely are looking at single sign-on because the other thing is there's always so many internal changes in the company. I don't want to be dependent on internal colleagues, and also because of so many changes that are always happening. And in fact, our network services person, like, they'd had some reductions in that organization, and we were worried that the whole process would fall apart, but he was still there. But because of that, I am looking more for an external solution because I think it would be much better at mapping. Because we all know, like, the issue is I can get any usage by department, everything through a click through the e-library, but 99% of your usage is probably not through the front of your e-library. It's when people go to a database and click out from there. So that's what's missing. Now, is Blue Coat, our system, perfect? No. Because we know that it can't collect data from like every browser people are using, because Pfizer is still on Internet Explorer, but it doesn't collect every single thing. And there's still unknown cost centers and some mapping things. It's not perfect. But it's what we had, and it worked out really well for us. So. Sue had a question.
I think we have time for one more question, so we'll get one back as well.
So I know you said you're concerned about changes in organization down the line and funding. Are you worried about that? I mean, what's going to happen in 2015? Will you still be able to apply that model?
I hope so. Because they keep telling us 2015 is going to be like a really good year. So I don't know. I've never worked at these companies when they have these like woo-hoo Viagra years. I don't know. I think it's actually going to continue to work well. The reason that we're also thinking about this, and it's, I'm sure it's no surprise, people, like investors, keep wondering if Pfizer will become separate companies, you know, like eventually break off. So that's, I'm not saying anything that's top secret. Everyone's speculating, because I know like J&J has a separate operating model as well. But that's one reason why I think we wouldn't even know, would we still be an enabling function across the whole company? How would that work? But I do want to look for a different solution that kind of goes across instead of is hidden within one function in the company.
And I'm going to hog the mic. I have another question. Since you've got the model down pat now, are you leery that it might be a candidate to be outsourced?
Isn't everything always a candidate to be outsourced? I don't know. I mean, I feel that because yes, the model, like if you did single sign-on, would they eventually be doing all of our content management? I don't know. But I do feel that we have this value proposition that we bring and that R&D has, you know, felt that worked well for them. And we, as I said, we had great feedback from them. They feel that we have great expertise. Does it mean that it's lifelong? I never believe that. Bob, though, has been at the company for a long time, so I don't know. He's managed to stay put. So, but yes, it's always a possibility.
Okay, we have time for one more here.
I wanted to get a question you can answer.
As you look at the future, you know, a lot of the collections are fluid. You know, there's a sort of tail end in your collection that's fluid, especially now we've got much better metrics on usage. So, you know, as each year you go through and you look at the usage and your collection will move somewhat, what will you do to manage the collection that's required by the organisation outside the key stakeholder that is holding the purse strings? Mm. So what's the incentive for that organisation, in this case R&D, to contribute monies for other parts of the organisation that would like to have collections instead of just reaping savings on content that's not being used extensively? And how would you manage that? Because, you know, it may just be small amounts of money and the other organisation may just want it for their organisation and not want to pay for it globally. So you start moving towards a less than global content distribution.
That is always a risk. Do you want to take it,
Sure. Yeah, I mean, part of what Mindy was getting at when we're looking at the value proposition and maximising the value of the resources is, you know, if there's a smaller group that's using the primary users of, say, a set of journals or a specific database, you know, it may be that it's not going to be easy to renegotiate it so that only they have access to it, and then maybe change the funding model. But if they're a critical part of the business and the allocation has changed, it may be that, that you know, hopefully the funding group recognizes that. You know, it's not a guarantee. You know, and it may be that eventually we do move towards more of a what would you call it? I'm going to call it targeted licensing. But what would you call it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
we're calling it something else too. That may be precision licensing. You know, where it may move out of, you know, say the R&D organization funding something that's really just used by one small group, whether it's the regulatory with.